Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. This is my wild world, and we've done it again. We had a guest plan, and guess what? They flew the coop, but that's okay because we have a crack production staff that can come up with guests just like that, and we've done just that tonight because we're going to have a round table for all of those that are interested in the Bigfoot Sasquatch legend. That's going to be happening tonight. All the way from the forest of Pennsylvania, Mr. Eric Altman. Good evening, Eric.
Howdy.
How are you doing tonight, Larry?
That was pitiful.
Wasn't it?
Oh, gosh. And from the, and I'm so very jealous, the beautiful wonderlands and the forest and mountains and beautiful coastlands of Oregon, Miss Diane Stocking. Good evening, Diane.
Well, how are you feeling, Larry?
Well, I was feeling pretty good till about quarter till 10 or 11 when I realized our guest was not going to be here. And Eric says, hey, I know someone that would just be more than wonderful enough just to come in. And I said, who? And he, when he said your name, I says, you're kidding. Because I think you're one of the top people in the field. Absolutely.
Well, bless your little heart. Thank you.
Well, I do feel that way, and I have for a long time. And
well, I very much appreciate that.
Well, I'm very particular on when we discuss Bigfoot and Sasquatch, the guests that we have on, because there are certain elements that... there are certain people that I do respect, and you are one of them, and it's great. How's things in Oregon? I was asking you how the weather was, and I'm so jealous.
Oh, it's beautiful. In the last few days, we've had just sunny skies and blue skies and, you know, anywhere between 45 and 55 degrees. It's been beautiful.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at 20 degrees outside, and can't decide whether it wants to snow or rain. And all my tigers are looking at me like, what's the deal with this? Of course, they were born and raised in Indiana, so I think they kind of know the deal now. But anyway,
okay.
I wasn't looking forward to. I never look forward to this winter, but what can you do? So, how's things in Oregon? Is there any reports coming in from your part of the country?
Well, few and far between right now. There's been one or two here and there, but nothing major at the moment, and nothing's really panned out. So that's where we're at the moment.
Well, I've heard great things. I have a good friend in Washington that gets down in your neck of the woods, too, and he's talking about a lot of fantastic reports in that part of the country. A lot of things going on, so one of these days I'm going to make it out that way and see if we can scare one out or scare me out.
Well, that'd be great. I wish you would. Either way.
Absolutely. So did you have a chance to, have you been following the madness that's been going on with the dark secret held by John Green and Bob Gimlin and the rest of those nerds?
Oh, yes, most definitely. And goodness, let me turn my volume down here. Anyway, yeah, I've been following the nonsense, and it's like, where people come up with this stuff, I just don't know. I really don't.
Well, I'm beginning to believe it just might be for one's amusement that sits in front of a computer screen all the time and just to see what they can stir up. Because they've stirred up a lot.
It could be.
Because I keep saying to myself, well, let's quit talking about it, then it'll just die away. But it's such a crazy story, it's kind of hard to. In fact, we were doing a.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, yeah. And we were doing a program last night with Bill Miller, and boy, oh my Lord. You talk about. He exploded. Because he's good friends.
Oh, really?
With John. Oh, yes. And he went into things that I hadn't even thought about, really. And. Because when these posts first started showing up on the various forums, I thought, you know, it was some kind of a joke. I didn't even bother to read the post. And then I was on the phone with John Green. I said, I've been recently emailed a picture of him years and years and years ago in Bob Titmus. And he's asked me the origin of the picture. And I told him, he said, oh, that's not, he said, that's the plane, the pilot. And then he filled me in. And then I started reading some of the posts and so forth. Of course, we had him on the program. Gosh, I think it's been a month ago now almost. But he was pretty. But I'll tell you, poor old Bob Gimlin, he just went off the deep end. I mean, he's ready to go climb on a horse and ride down south and knock some heads because he was pretty upset about it. So we'll see what happens.
I can understand. Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, you know, one thing that I had to laugh about was, you know, they're talking about John, that he's, you know, this major cover-up of Bigfoot bodies. And, you know, if anybody knows John and his history, it's like this man would not have covered up any kind of evidence or bodies if he had had them in his hand, you know?
Well,
and
go ahead.
No, yeah. So go ahead.
No, and, well, here's what I was thinking. Okay, let's say Weyerhaeuser did offer Bob Titmus and whoever to slaughter these and kill these all. What kind of dollar would they have supposedly paid them? Because we know, we have a pretty darn good idea what a body would be actually worth versus what Weyerhaeuser might say, well, heck, we'll give you $100,000 to go and take care of this problem, supposedly. Well, one body is worth 10 times that. If we want to be,
oh yeah.
If we just want to lay it right, you know, lay it right in front of everybody, it's $1 million thing, without a doubt. At least, probably much more than that. So none of it adds up. And of course, Bill Miller talking about. I don't know if even Eric heard this last night, but he was talking about the Bluff Creek, how the stream was bred from shore to shore, was supposedly with the blood of Sasquatches.
Right.
Well, that stream runs so fast that you'd have, if you poured a 55-gallon drum of red ink in that stream, within 5 minutes, it's a mile down the river. It's gone.
Right.
So, you know, they would have had a whole, you know, for that to be realistic, it would have had to have been several, so, but still stupid, so we shouldn't talk about it any longer. So I know Eric's had quite a few reports in Pennsylvania. Have you heard about those, Diane?
Well, he sent me several over the last few months that, if that's what he's talking about, or you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what.
Yeah.
Fill us in, Eric. What's the latest developments in Pennsylvania as far as Bigfoot activity?
Well, the sightings continue to come in. We've gotten a few more reports recently from an area that's been quite active in southwestern Pennsylvania, in the Fayette County area. The most recent came about 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. A gentleman claims that while bear hunting, he put his scope on what he thought was a bear until it stood up and walked away on two legs. And he said, just looking at it through the scope, he's bear hunted all his life, and he could tell right away looking at it, it looked very unusual, not like a typical bear. And he was pretty stunned. We're trying to get more information from him, have him take us to the location where he saw it at. But that makes the fourth report in that particular area of Fayette County since going back to July So it's been a real active area for some reason, and we haven't gotten a lot of reports from that area for almost 4 or 5 years, and all of a sudden we've gotten 8 reports out of that area in the last 4 or 5 months. So pretty impressive stuff going on. We've actually been able to cast what we believe very well could be a foot track that was left by a creature. We found it the day after a sighting occurred on September 23rd. In Fayette County, in the Chestnut Ridge area of southwestern PA. And in central Pennsylvania, we've collected what very well could be hair from either a bear or a human or possibly even a squatch. We're working right now. Tim Cassidy has the hair. He collected it, put it in some acid-free envelopes. We collected it from 2 different pine trees in this small grove of pines that were broken off at the top. And he's working with Dr. Meldrum to try to secure us a safe place to send these hairs so they don't disappear, and you know, so we can try to get some good conclusive answers as to what exactly they are. So things have been kind of interesting here in Pennsylvania this past summer, and they're still hopping and bopping here. So we're kind of happy about that.
You know, the Pennsylvania area, as well as northeastern Ohio forever, has been a hotbed of these reports. In fact, when I was in Monroeville, which is a suburb of Pittsburgh, for the Sportsman Show, this has been several years ago, I took my exhibit. In fact, I don't know if Eric ever had a chance to see it, but I actually constructed an 8-foot Bigfoot model. My wife said I was possessed. 8 foot of Doc Foam and paper mache. But anyway, so we had it set up there, and I did some programs, some brief programs, and I'm telling you, for the amount of people that were there, the eyewitnesses that would come forth was incredible. People that basically would tell me that they had experienced, they had seen something or whatever, and they pretty much gave me the impression that I was the first one they've really talked to about it, because as I know you found through your experiences, a lot of people, when they see one of these things, they just shut up about it. They just don't believe what they've seen. In fact, there was a fellow that used to go into the Chestnut Ridge, and I suspect that he still does, Bob France. I'm sure you know him, Eric.
Very well. Bob's a very dear friend of mine.
Well, we had a chance. I had a chance to see some of his foot castings, which were pretty impressive. And he was telling me about his adventures into the Chestnut Ridge area. And I think one of the best ones was basically he looked up and there was one standing behind a rock, just staring right dead at him. And he had his camera hanging from his neck, so he thought, well, this is my opportunity. So he looks down to turn the camera on and get it adjusted so he possibly can take a photograph of this thing looking at him. Well, the moment he looks down, it takes off. And he can hear it going through the woods at an incredible rate of speed. So he just backs straight up. And when he backs up, he backs into a tree. And he thought this thing had doubled back on him. He thought he'd backed into it. He lost all bodily functions at that moment. And,
yeah, he shared that story with me.
Yeah, yeah. And it's pretty... But I guess, of course, his son now, I imagine he's probably out of high school by now, I assume. But he used to take him up there in that camp at Chestnut Ridge, and he'd say that the things would come around when his boy was in camp quite frequently. But as far as when he was around, it didn't happen.
Hello?
We lost Diane. Yeah. I just brought her back on.
Sorry. Oh, great.
I'm back. I don't know what happened. It just went dead.
It's called Blog Talk Radio.
Exactly. Oh, okay. What that works for me, too.
We've had our experiences.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's absolutely fine. When we were discussing Pennsylvania and all the reports, and northeastern Ohio. In fact, I was trying so hard to get my good friend from Conneaut to come on, but he just won't do it.
Oh, man.
And I have here, in fact, the last 3 days I've been kind of going through my archives of stuff I've compiled over almost 30 years. And I'm trying to get it in some order so it's just not in a pile. And I came across that journal that he had written that his wife had gone through and typed out and sent every page to me with dates and times and everything. And it's really a book in itself. It's just so fantastic. And when you hear him talk about it, it's he's such an amazing story. He's a good communicator. I mean, the way he puts things is just right to the point. And so that's why I was kind of upset that he wouldn't come on, because people would just love him. I know because he's such a great orator or whatever. But anyway. But it's such a hotbed up there. It's just absolutely amazing. Of course, now it's become a suburbia. So he said that that it's nothing like it was in the early 80s when it was so much fun. his wife didn't really think that it was as much fun as, well, I don't know. You know, it's kind of funny because he's the kind of fellow that he has a large collection of guns, and as when they moved in there, and the gun collection got bigger guns and larger guns and more guns. In fact, one night he was out shooting something. His neighbor 5 miles away says, "What the hell are you shooting over there?" And some type of bazooka-like thing he bought. I don't know, but he was bound and determined that he. At one point, I think he kind of changed after a while. If he had the opportunity, he was going to take one down, which is kind of sad. But I think a lot of it had to do with, and you may find it's true, that he just got sick of people pointing and laughing at him. That he wanted to believe that he wasn't a nut. Of course, every neighbor in that community knew that he wasn't, because they'd all seen him before or had experiences with him, and they'd been there for any period of time. But, of course, he said that his, called him Nature Boy, moved in. He said, "Old Nature Boy, he don't want to put up no outside lights. He don't want to keep the grass mowed. He likes to leave it kind of wild." So he said, "I just sit up on my porch and drink beer, and I'd look over there, and I could hear, I forget what he called it. He had a name for him, George or something. He said, I could hear old George over there whistling and carrying on." He says, about that time, he'd see the guy's lights coming on, and then he says, he lived like that for about 2 months, and all of a sudden he started putting out the outdoor lights, and he had the place lit up pretty good. So, doesn't have that problem anymore, I guess. Something, he just didn't appreciate the things peeking in his windows at night, I think, was the whole deal.
I would love that.
Well, I would too. They can't peek in my window because we got an 8-foot fence around the damn place. But, I know.
You have a few more deterrents there, Larry. You know, besides an 8-foot fence, you've got some, you know, kind of ferocious creatures there. So,
you know, I don't know whether those are deterrents or not. They might be. They might be magnets for them. You know how we all love to go to the zoo. And they might just be strolling through and say, "Let's go look at some tigers or something." I don't know if you heard the story. That I told Eric, and I've probably related over the program before, but I had some good friends here from the Everglades, old gator hunters and stuff, and we were putting up a big new enclosure for one of the tigers. And I had to take off and get some supplies, and I come back, and they said, "Oh, something moved back through your ravine." I said, "Oh, really?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "It was big. Don't know what it was." Well, I had a strong suspicion. Well, I had a big Siberian tiger at that time. It weighed about 550, 575 pounds. And
wow.
when you'd go and feed him, you'd take your bucket of meat up to his gate, and he'd just attack the gate. You'd have to move him to one side, throw the meat in there. Well, that night, I go out there to feed him, and he's not coming up to the gate. And first thought is, my God, he's gotten out. How could that have happened? So I looked back there in the enclosure, and he wasn't out. He was clear at the other end. He was sitting there looking straight back into the forest, and he wasn't interested in any meat at all. Something back there had his total attention and respect.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
yeah.
That's pretty wild. So there's no reports going on in Oregon?
Well, I've got, like, a couple of, there's one down in, it's, you know, west central Oregon, and that area we're trying to get into, but it's private property. So that's where we're at with that one. There was some sightings, but it's kind of slow right now as far, well, Larry, by now you should know me. I'm like, you know, if it's not an actual, somebody saw something, then, you know, if somebody heard something, I don't,
right,
you know, spend a lot of time, you know, going hundreds of miles to check something out because somebody heard something or smelt something.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's, you know, so there's a couple going on, but they're iffy right now.
Well, I won't even go out if it's one that walked in front of a car. Because the thing would be 20 miles from wherever they saw it two nights ago walking in front of their car.
Right.
So.
But yeah, I mean, places like that, you can say, at least you know the area that they're in at the moment, and
right.
You know, at least you've got a general area to you know, search and look through. That's good for.
Kind of just interested in the ones where the things are showing up for beer every night and
mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
There are those reports out there.
Yes, there are.
But
I won't even mention some of the hits I've gotten off the website from some people that are basically, wow, you know, I'm not into the paranormal aspect of Bigfoot and the interdimensional stuff, but I get fairly large amount of emails and contacts to the website for, you know, I saw floating eyes or things like that, and I'm not really into that stuff. So, you know, I thank them for their information and go from there.
Well, I had a contact I hadn't talked to in over 20 years. In fact, I may have discussed this with Eric years ago, of a young, she's not young now, Native American gal that I did a television program here in Indianapolis about this long, long time ago. Anyway, she called me up, and when I was discussing some of the locations involved, I wasn't very specific.
Mm-hmm.
So she flat mm-hmm. calls me up, and she says to me, she says, you were talking about Morgan Monroe State Forest. I says,
oh,
real? I says, she said, and just as frank, and she just, oh, yeah, she said, there's five of them in there. I says, really? I said, how do you know that? She says, I just know. Then she says, I can call them in. And, of course, then I'm...
Okay.
I go, well, how do you do that? She goes, I use a bull roar. Are you familiar with that, Diane?
A bull roar?
Uh-huh.
Okay, are we talking a bull as in elk bull or bull as in bovine bull?
Well, neither one. It's a piece of wood that is in the shape of a canoe that is flat, that is
mm-hmm.
an Aboriginal tool or instrument where a rope is tied to, or a string is tied to it, and you twirl it over your head, and it makes this fluttering sound. And the Aborigines use it, and the Native Americans use it.
Okay. I know what you're talking about.
And she said one of these things will call them in. And then, okay, and then this is her next.
Whoa.
Yeah, so here's the next thing she tells me. She says, now, if you'll take me down there, I can do this. Then in her second part of her statement, she said, you'll be risking your life.
What?
And I said, yeah, she said, you'll be risking your life. I go, how is that going to happen? She said, well, and she's just as frank as can be. I mean, she just, like she's talking about the weather that day. She said, if you get between a male and a female, or a male and a younger one, he will grab you by your ankles and beat you up against a tree. Well, right away, I'm
thinking,
that's no party. That doesn't sound like any fun at all. But she tells me this, and you might remember this story. I think it was out of Washington. The sheriff, he was on patrol one night, and he heard what he'd stopped his patrol car, and he was just, you know, whatever. He had a speed trap set up or something. But he was hearing coyotes. Then he heard something that sounded like coyotes. Then the two sounds came together. And then basically it sounded like, he said, it just sounded like a vicious fight. So as soon as it got light, he walks to where he heard these sounds, and he walks up and he sees these two coyotes, and they were laying at the base of a tree, and they literally had been beaten up against that tree.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, and I remembered that. I remember him telling me that. And so when she told me that, I'm thinking, whoa. So I never did go down there with her. I wasn't afraid. I was afraid of the Native American. Yes, absolutely. And of course, a lot of the belief there is, like you say, the paranormal. And I've said in many of my programs, if I see it walking off a spaceship, or if it's floating through the trees, I'm done with it. I ain't interested in this any longer.
Yeah.
if it's not a critter, I'm sorry. My interest is dwindled, because I can handle a critter. None of the other stuff, you know. So anyway.
Now, Larry, do you feel that they are apes? Or are they more human, of the human genus, of some type?
Well, human. And this is why I say this.
Okay.
Because if it was a big gorilla, a big monkey, we'd have one. It has to be beyond that. A little slicker than that. People say, well, there are tribes in New Guinea, in South America and Brazil, that anthropologists know that those tribes are in there. But if they don't want to be found, you don't find them. You don't even find a bit of evidence that they're in there. So we're dealing with something very, very similar to that. And like I have said, people have no idea, none, zero, how intelligent what we're dealing with here.
You're right.
Far above.
You're right.
You don't have no... In other words, when you're walking through the forest, and if these things are around, they know what you're up to. They know exactly what your agenda is. That's why more sightings are usually reported by younger people, women. You know, hunters don't run... You think about it, though. The woods are filled with hunters, and hunters don't run into them very often. Did you know Joan Jeffers?
Who?
Or Gene Jeffers from Pennsylvania?
I've heard of, yes. How we, Eric?
No, I never met her. She passed away from cancer before I got a chance to meet her, but it was Joan Jeffers, and she worked very close with Dr. Paul Johnson.
Well, I had a conversation with her one night, and she was telling me how she would bait these, and she would sit in her car and watch them come out and eat the baits. But she said if she had a pistol in her car or anything besides that, they wouldn't show up. And she,
if she had a pistol, they wouldn't show up?
They would not show up.
Okay.
No. So she'd offered me, because she said she could find anyone that would go on this one stretch of road where she does this that was willing to do it. People were just too intimidated or whatever. And I said right away, I said, I'd do it. And I didn't get over there in time before she passed away. I would have done it in a heartbeat. But anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've got to take a little break. So you can check that football score. Is it good or bad?
Okay. it's pretty good right now.
Good. Well, we'll be back.
Yeah, 33-28, guys.
Oh, man. We'll be back in 2 or 3 minutes. This is Larry Batson. This is Wild World. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio with Diane Stocking and Eric Altman. We'll be back in just a few.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Pat Green. The blood supply is at critically low levels, and you can help. Call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE. That's 1-800-GIVE-LIFE to schedule your appointment to donate blood. Your donation is critical because every 2 seconds someone in America needs blood. That's accident victims, surgical candidates, and cancer patients, just to name a few. Please donate blood and encourage your friends, family, and neighbors to give too. Please call the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or visit givelife.org to make your appointment. Thank you.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
It's hurricane season. Are you prepared? I'm Jim Cantore, reminding you to follow these 3 easy steps to be Red Cross ready for a hurricane. First, build a disaster supply kit. Next, make a family communication and evacuation plan. Finally, stay informed. Listen to local radio and TV reports when hurricanes are forecast, and follow the guidance of local officials. For more information, contact your local American Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney on behalf of Rad. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. Remember, if you're partying this holiday season, don't drink and drive. Got it? It's just not worth it. Doesn't make sense. Thank you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Duty, freedom, country, family. They're the values that make America strong and what our armed forces are fighting to defend.
While many talk about these ideals, without action, they are just empty words.
If you think America's military families deserve more, log on to thanksusa.org. It's a great way to thank our troops and give military families the gift of education.
Thanksusa.org. Scholarships for America's military families. You can make a difference.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone, from Clinton Falls, Indiana. Welcome to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. If you're in Samoa right now, it's 4:34. Hope you're enjoying a fine afternoon. But if you're on the East Coast...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Did we explain why I said that?
It's up to you, Larry.
We had a wacky moment earlier before the program started. Of course, this is all just wacky anyway. Then Eric, who's my technical producer and co-producer of this entertainment mecca, informs me that our program was supposed to be at 4 o'clock, and then he says, oh, wait a minute, that's Samoan time. And for a while, we were a little confused. So I put on a grass skirt, and I feel like I'm in Samoa right now. But anyway.
Ah.
And that's not a pretty picture, I'll tell you that right now. But a pretty picture is Diane Stocking, and she's here to join us tonight, and we're so thrilled that she did. I know there's a lot of folks out there, big fans, follow the work that you do in Bigfoot research and all that good stuff.
Well, gee. Well, I try.
We all try, but, you know, a brutal point was brought up to me today. Eric will appreciate this.
Uh-huh.
From Mr. Dran Guinness over in Virginia, that since the Patterson film, we don't really have anything. Except a few footprints.
Well, yeah. That's about right.
That is absolutely the truth.
Yes.
I've got a...
Yes, it is.
And that's... And I have to confess, when I was really took off on this in, oh, God, 83 or 4, I think, and I started seeing all the evidence and sightings and so forth, I thought by now that we'd have this thing solved. But it just doesn't seem to gonna happen. I don't know. Of course, John Green swears if anyone catches one, it'll be me. I don't think so. In fact, he says with every time I call him up, he says, "Have you got one yet?" No, John, I don't have one yet.
No, not yet.
But you know, man. You never know. You never know. Of course, the fellow over in Conneaut, when he'd have those reports and the game department would come out, they'd bring a big bear trap, set it up in his yard, and he'd just give them the dirtiest look like, what do you think? Who are you trying to fool? It doesn't make me feel any better, which basically is what they were trying to do, trying to, I guess, kind of neutralize him so he'd shut up about it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most intriguing things, and jumping right in, Eric, anytime you want. If
I have an interesting bear trap story to share with you, if you have a second.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was put in contact with a woman from Warren, Pennsylvania, in the northwestern part of the state, up near the Kinzua Dam. You remember those pictures from 2007, supposed juvenile Sasquatch they called the Jacob's Creatures photos? Well, that was basically in her backyard where the photos were taken, and she called me to tell me that she had a very close encounter with a creature that climbed up the lattice onto her second-story back deck and was staring in her back patio doors. Well, she contacted the game commission about what she experienced, and this thing was coming around her house almost on a nightly basis. So they brought out a bear trap. They put it out in the woods behind her home, and came back to get it about 3 or 4 days later, and the front end of the bear trap was completely crushed in, like something big walked up to it, just like a metal garbage can, and just crushed the front end of it. And the game warden said, yeah, it was probably a large black bear that did that.
Right. That's weird.
I don't think so.
No.
That's why they call it a bear trap, because that's what they do. Bears don't break out of them.
Well, whatever crushed it in didn't go into the trap. It actually, from the looks of the bear trap that she saw, it looked like something walked up to the front of it or climbed up on top of it and caved the front of the trap down. Almost
oh,
like
that way.
Crush, yeah, like you would crush a garbage can together.
Oh.
Live, you know, yeah.
Well, that puts
I actually got picked up. What's that?
That puts things in a whole different perspective.
Yeah, and the game warden that she talked to up there insisted that a black bear did it, was responsible for it. They didn't want to hear anything to do with Bigfoot.
Well,
that sounds typical.
That's true, and I've kind of hoped that since I did my program for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in last summer, and in some ways it has opened up a little bit. I've gotten emails from rangers and so forth that now they're not afraid to go and say what they've seen or what they've experienced. So we'll see. I'm supposed to go back again in June and do another one, but for some reason this is going to be a private affair. So we'll see what that's all about. Yes. But, that's a whole different deal there, Eric.
It was a pretty intriguing story. Unfortunately, she had some miscommunications. She misunderstood me when I said we would like to bring 3 or 4 guys up to check out the area and her property and have a look around. She thought I meant 34 guys up.
Oh.
And she dropped conversation with me pretty quick after that and didn't get back in touch with me until almost a year later. So.
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story, a report from northeastern Ohio. So a good friend of mine who'd had all that activity for all those years and had documented every bit of it, he went back into this property known as Jumbo Woods, which is in, I think it's just east of his home. And he come across this ridge, and all of a sudden he looks down this valley. And someone had stretched out. He said it had to be at least 16 foot high steel fencing, flexible fencing, and it was stretched out into a circle. And hanging from the fencing was rabbits and pieces of meat and that sort of thing. But what was most intriguing about it is that he had several, he said they looked like malamutes that this guy was working with, and he was working them totally with hand signals, no voice commands whatsoever. And so he watched this guy do this for some time. He said it was really quite extraordinary. He had his almost big circle net, and he got back and he called the game warden about it, and the game warden said, well, you just forget what you saw. And you just kind of keep that to yourself. And for about a month after that, he said he'd look out his window of his house and there would be one of those green cars parked down the road, you know, just as he felt was kind of just observing what he was doing or what he was carrying on about, so... It's pretty wild. In fact, one of the neighbors said they saw a big truck come in on one of the side roads from this trap that had been set up, and the guy come out of the woods and picked up a couple boxes that looked like provisions and went back into the woods with them. But so I don't know. You know, it's just you know, like John Green said, the longer you pursue this, the more questions you'll have. After over almost 30 years for me, I got a ton of them.
Yeah.
This doesn't make any sense. I just want to be a big monkey, and that's it.
No. No.
Big human monkey.
No, yeah, human, not monkey.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It has to be. It has to be. I mean, it's just my zoological knowledge tells me it just absolutely has to be. It can't be it's not a gorilla.
Right.
Too smart.
Yeah. Now, of course, we just got, you know, confirmation that Hobbit, which, of course, a lot of people don't like that name, it's been confirmed that they are a type of human. It's not a diseased human or anything. It is an actual Homo forensis, which is what it is. It's a human of some type. So who's to say, okay, we've got little itty-bitty humans. Why can't we have, you know, the really big guys out there wandering around the woods?
Well, that's true. In fact, I've had reports of little bitty furry folks walking around.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, mm-hmm. I should say this, and I haven't even mentioned this to my wife, but where I live, we have activity, and like basically I can be taking out the trash one night and I can walk into one. So one of my dogs took off, this was 3 nights ago, and mm-hmm. he's a Black Lab and St. Bernard mix, and he didn't come back. So we're waiting around, and he's been known to do that for a while, so I'm out in the front yard and I'm hollering for him, and I can hear this bark way off in the distance. So I thought, mm-hmm. that bark sounds just like him. So I start heading back that way, and it's like 11. And I couldn't find a flashlight with a battery in it. So I'm just kind of walking through these fields in the dark. And I saw, I'm not sure exactly what I saw, but it was a black form run across this field in front of me and into my woods. But it wasn't very big. But it was so dark, you know, it could have been a deer, but it just didn't. I just didn't have that feeling that it was a deer. It was, the black form wasn't long and four-legged. It seemed more upright and two-legged, but it wasn't that tall, maybe three and a half, 4 feet tall. Basically, the only thing I could see was the top part, and I couldn't see it that clearly. But it was a good thing because I kind of followed that back through there, and I found my dog, and his foot was caught in a snare somehow. So I'm glad I decided to look for him that night, or he'd have been it, you know. So I had a happy ending, but it was kind of unnerving there for a moment because I thought, what the hell is that? Because at first I thought it was the dog because he's black, but it wasn't. It wasn't the dog, so.
Uh-huh.
We have... the habits of, I have a Great Pyrenees, which is a 170-pound dog, and this Black Lab St. Bernard mix, and he's about 120. And the two wolves that live in the house and with the dogs, and there's something about 9:30 at night every night that comes across our yard that they all come unglued about. And I haven't figured that out yet. It's almost like clockwork. It's 9:30. Yeah. They look in that direction.
And we have no video, Larry?
Yes.
We have no video?
We have no video.
Cameras out? Oh, really?
They can smell those cam trackers. And cam trackers ain't worth the plastic they're in.
Yeah, because it's the plastic that they're in.
It's the plastic. They smell like where they were built.
And
the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they have done so much. I know this because they have done so much research in those cameras that they basically have set those cameras up and had cameras photographing the cameras to see how animals reacted to them. This is true. And they've tested every camera that's on the market right now, manufactured. And old Bill over in Virginia, they're going after his. I mean, they're thinking that might be the hot ticket. But, they said they've actually got video of bears going up and urinating on these cameras and stuff. And animals completely avoid them. Oh, yeah. So.
Well, the oil and the plastic also attracts the bears. The bears like to chew on them.
The petroleum.
The petroleum in the cameras. The shells themselves, the bears like that.
Right, and it's of course.
They're like Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I got in trouble. We did the Monster Quest a couple summers ago, and I made fun of them, and they went to bed with me.
Oops.
Yes, I did.
No wonder you ended up on the cutting room floor.
The floor producer now. She sits there with her Hollywood-like look, and I proceeded to tell him that. I says, first of all, she says, what's the chances of us filming a Bigfoot? And I said, well, about 1 in 10 million. And I said, and if I thought that we would or if we did or something, I said, I would have already had it worked out where you guys would have to pay me a lot of money. Because I know what you'd do with it.
Lots of money.
But then I told him, I said, I've watched these expeditions on your show where, like, 10 guys are out there with their Winnebago and their walkie-talkies and their... their ATVs and their cameras dangling from every other tree. I says, I could put them boys where they're mountain lions, and they ain't going to find a mountain lion, let alone one of these. And then they had the one, this is the one I got a really big chuckle out of, when they were in pursuit of the Yeti. Here are these guys walking through the Himalayas. They can't hardly breathe. A couple of them are a little chunky, so they're just like going up these mountains, and they're not even in the higher elevations. They're still in the trees, and they're gasping for every breath, and they're going up these mountains. We're hunting the Yeti. You better hunt some oxygen, brother. So, we're hunting the Yeti up here, and I'm thinking, damn Yeti, look over a ridge, take one look at you, sorry guys, and it's gone to the next province.
Oh, man. But it's so true.
Oh, it is so. And, of course, every little movement of mud or indentation to ground, well, we have a track. That's a toe.
Yeah.
We came so close this week. But you know what, really, and Jeff will probably kill me about this, but you know that first monster quest they did where Meldrum went up to Ontario with the producer of the show, and something was throwing rocks at their cabin? They were crying like girly girls.
I know.
They were afraid.
I know. It's like my first thought is like, okay, why don't you go outside and see what the heck is throwing rocks at the cabin? But
really,
everybody was inside the cabin.
Yeah, put a helmet on or something, you know.
Who cares? It's just like, get outside and find out what it is. I mean, oh my gosh. But I don't know. Some of the shows, it's like, you know, it's the big buildup and then nothing. And the big buildup and then nothing. And I get frustrated at, you know, after all the shows that they've done, there's still nothing.
Oh, I know. And I was contacted by a production company out of Hollywood that, excuse me, that said we're putting a team together. Would you like to be a part of it? You know, we really want to do it right. And I said, well, yeah. My second question is, what's your budget? Because, I still got mouths to feed. And I'm going off to look for Bigfoot. Well, what's the check involved with this? So, you know. But anyway.
Yeah.
So it's. But I ran into the guy, the head guy from Monster Quest. He used to produce a hunting and fishing show with his dog. Darn, I can't think of his name. But he's the head producer of the whole deal. It's his, I don't know if it's his brainchild, but he's the money behind it. And he proceeded to tell me that Monster Quest had just signed on for, and this was last year, it was last year, 20 more episodes, I think, was what he said exactly. And as he's leaving, here's what he called the show. This is the guy that produces it. This is the guy that basically buys a house with this show. He calls it Legend Meets Bullshit.
Ooh, and this is the guy that's putting money behind it. Okay. I hear Eric, too, laughing.
I'm shaking my head.
Yeah,
That's just absolutely,
you know,
true.
Unfortunately, yeah, I believe you.
Sitting here with a smile and shaking my head.
Yeah, but you've got a show that's got, you know, it's got a halfway decent budget, obviously. But when you're going after something like Bigfoot, you can't, you know, you're going to get let down because you're not going to get out there with a film crew and a bunch of people and expect to find, it's just not going to happen.
Right.
So where are you going to go from there? You have nowhere to go.
No.
You know?
So.
You know, it's.
As I said, they've got to make a show. They've got to put something on there, you know, even though it is just a bunch of fat guys and camels walking around with their cameras and walkie-talkies going, I hear a sound over there, or something's throwing rocks at us, you know.
There you go. Or I heard something or smelt something or envisioned something or got a psychic connection with something or whatever.
I think it's my brother-in-law.
It's just not going to work.
Shave.
You know, with the money that they put into production of these shows, if they would just hand that over to somebody so that they could use it just for the purpose of getting out there and trying to find something, I think they would have had a better something, some kind of, you know.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
You know.
Yeah. So. If any of them are tuned in tonight, go ahead and make that check out to Larry Batson /
Diane Stocking.
And Diane Stocking. We'll have Eric and myself, we're just looking 10 mil. That'll give us seats 3.5. No, that's not right.
There
three
you
and
go.
A third. $3,300,000. Oh, it could be like The Amazing Race. Give us each $3 million to buy what we need to pursue it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do it in Oregon.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Eric can do it in PA.
Yeah.
And I'll find a nice warm climate somewhere to chase.
Okay. You sound kind of woofy there, Larry.
I've seen Indiana.
Yeah.
I'll go somewhere else. Absolutely. It'd be phenomenal.
It'd be great. I mean, you know, unfortunately we have a day job. You know, if I didn't have to worry about working to, you know, put a roof over my head, then, you know, I could be out in the woods 24 hours a day.
There you go.
Something.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to tell you, Diane, it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you tonight. I'm so glad that you stepped in.
Well, thank you.
And
not a problem.
I'll tell you what, we'll have to do this again. We'll do it where we actually promote it, because I know there's lots of people want to hear what you have to say. And for you just to come on do this at the last minute, it's quite a blessing. But I'll tell you, we have something pretty exciting next. Well, maybe not as exciting as this week, but we have Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, Jim Fowler. You remember him, don't you, Diane?
Oh, my God. Okay, now, I'm not that old. Oh, yes, I am. Yes, I do. Eric?
Marlon Perkins' cohort.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he'll be on next week. So, in fact, that was...
That's great.
Well, we hope, you know. Your phone might be ringing again.
It's okay. Give me a call. I'll be here.
No. Next time we'll do it. We'll promote it, and we'll gain our audience, and people want to hear what you have to say, and it'll be fantastic. Well, I want to thank you. I want to thank Eric Altman for also standing in. And Eric has problems. When he thought we were on Samoan time.
Don't say it. We're not supposed to say anything about that, Larry.
He had a heart attack. but,
well, thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's been fantastic. Folks, you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. This is Larry Batson for Diane Stocking. Eric Altman. Hope you have a great week. We'll be back next week, next Thursday, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom star, Jim Fowler. We'll be talking about, and believe it or not, he has a Bigfoot story. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.